Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and friends beyond the binary, it's time for the podcaster who, I slather on this. It's time to slather on some sleepy stuff, maybe. That just popped into my head, though. Maybe slather on some syrupy, sleepy stuff, patrons, because you helped me do it. Thanks, and let's get on with the show. Hey, are you up all night tossing, turning, mind racing, trouble getting to sleep, trouble staying asleep? Well, welcome. This is Sleep With Me, the podcast that puts you to sleep. We do it as a bedtime story. All you need to do is get in bed, turn out the lights, and press play. I'm going to do the rest. What I'm going to attempt to do is create a safe place where you could set aside whatever's keeping you awake, whether it's thoughts, stuff on your mind you're thinking about, feelings, either emotional or physical, that's coming up for you. Feelings, physical sensations, changes, life events. Those are things that, I hear from people. Anything, whatever's keeping you awake. I'd like to take your mind off of that. I'd like to keep you company. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to send my voice across the deep, dark night and kind of as a call or, like a y'all call. They say, hey, this is a safe place. Why don't you come on in? I'm going to send my voice across the deep, dark night to try to say that and then do it with my hands. I don't know if you could really sense that, but I'm saying, hey, come on in. Safe place here. It's more of a safe general area, because you say safe place sounds like I'd have to check it out first. A safe area, you say. Well, it's like it's not. I don't know. It's not as you're right. Maybe I don't know. I'd like to have something more catchy than that, but I don't have anything. But I'm going to use a lulling, soothing, creaky, dulcet tones. Creaky. And dulcet tones that are both sweet and not sweet, but not sour, not umami or whatever that other word is. Probably, I guess creaky has a touch of salty. What is it? Sweet, sour, salt, bitter, not really bitter. Oh, sour and bitter are the same. Some part, my citrus brain just said, by the way, I'd say, are you sure about that? And then the other umami, I always get that one wrong, even though I love it. Holy cow. I love miso paste, man. If I talked about miso paste in an intro, I probably have, because talk about a versatile thing. It's not a condiment. But anyway, I don't want to go. I got new listeners here. Sorry about that. Creaky dulcet tones, pointless meanders, which you just, that was more of a, not a pointless meander, word fumbles, those are letter fumbles. I fumble words and I tumble into letters. He says, where's Scoots? Is that a ball pit? No. Is that a foam block pit? No. Scoots is in he's in a pit of his letters, well, that sounds like Sleep With Me. He tumbled right in there, but he's doing his best. So if you're new, let me catch up here. I'm glad you're here. And a couple of things. This podcast sounds a little bit different already, huh? Well, if you're having any issues getting to sleep, I'm here to keep you company and take your mind off stuff. But I'll be honest with you, show's a little bit different. It's a little bit silly. And it's a bit of like a... odd, or I mean, in a good way for some people. So it doesn't work for everybody. So give it a few tries if you like. No pressure to even do that. But that's what most reviewers say and regular listeners say. Oh, it took two or three tries. But there's no pressure to like the show. Just see how it goes. Because if you're skeptical, that makes total sense. Or you're like, what is this? The guy doesn't even know the five, didn't they teach that in not in kindergarten, but in some other grade? Didn't you have to fill out a thing where you colored in the circles on the tongue? And maybe you even did an experiment, where you tasted some sugar and salt and citrus. Scoots went to school before they discovered the umami zone. Also, that's a movie I'm working on and a song. except that Kenny Loggins already told me I can't use, you know, like, and I, he said, what is a, because I sent him a letter. He said, what is a highway to an umami zone even mean? And I said, let's go. That's our show. Drew Scooter and Kenny Loggins on the road. It's a new Food Network show, Kenny. Highway to the Umami Zone. Also, let's just lock that title down so, you know, Fieri or whoever else doesn't listen to this podcast. I think that could be a show. It'd be just like all the other ones. Wouldn't be really any different. I would say get me and Kenny Loggins, you know, maybe have Kenny Loggins and then a little bit more diversity of a cast. So keep Scoots out of it. Maybe Danica Patrick could, because then it would make, and then I don't know, we'll figure it out. But I mean, just seeing Danica Patrick and Kenny, who is it, Kenny Loggins? A lot of people don't even know who Kenny Loggins is, which is totally understandable, but because in the driving thing, and yeah, he could, maybe we could get the rights and that would be the thing. Highway to the Umami Zone. Sorry, I don't normally sing, but it's early in the show. So where was I? Oh, new listeners. Sorry, I got, that was a totally pointless meander. So if you're new and skeptical, there you go. You just, your skepticism has been met, like, and respected. So it shows a bit different. Here's what to expect, other than nonsense and me goofing around and not getting to the point, which is what every episode's like, just a heads up. So the structurally what to expect, which we're kind of in the middle of the structure, show starts off with a few minutes of business. And it's really key to keeping it free for everybody, just because of the size of the podcast. Then there's an intro, and I'll tell about the intro in a minute. Then there's some business. Then there's the story. Tonight we'll be talking about Star Trek: The Next Generation, but not really. That's not really important. It'll be more like a bedtime story, where Scoots is just rambling about stuff. Then we have some thank yous and good nights. So the intro is the beginning of the show. It's usually around 12 to 15 minutes long. Now, some people will skip ahead, but, you know, I look at the statistics. The majority of people listen, and like some people fall asleep during the intro. Some people get ready for bed during the intro, and some people are in bed winding down during the intro. And then some people listen during the day. And so the intro, the reason it's like 12 to 15 minutes is to give you a chance to wind down or to get, you know, brush your teeth, you know, put on your PJs, think about Kenny Loggins and Danica Patrick driving and tasting food. I'm already getting pitched by another part of my brain on getting Kenny G on there. And I said, well, let's just look, like, let's like look wider than that, okay? But that's not a terrible idea. I'm just saying, anyway, I got to get back to the new listener. So the intro is just, it's a show within a show, but it's also part of the podcast. I don't know when this is like the most thing, the hardest thing for the newest listener. That's why I talk about the intro so much, is because when you're new and you're like, it's definitely subverting any expectations, because like most people expect even a sleep podcast to intro to get to the point and get to the bedtime story. And I get like some people that are frustrated with that, or they say, what is this, a big infomercial? And I say, well, this one kind of is if you run the Food Network or a network that carries food TV shows, it is an infomercial for you, Food Network executives or representatives of Kenny G, Kenny Loggins, Danica Patrick, or any, you know, any purveyors of umami-based foods on a highway. Because, yeah, we'll be doing that show one day, and at least in my imagination, I'll be, like, I would be the driver. Right? Like, they could just, because I'm not really good at getting to the point anyway, like, I wouldn't actually be a host on the show, but I would be there. And then they, like, so I'd be like a sidekick, like whatever's less than a sidekick, not in a good way, where they'd say, and Scoots, what did you think about the crab apple fries? And maybe I'd have like punchline, like, ooh, mommy, that would be a little cheesy, but maybe that would be my catchline. I guess that's a little bit. Let's not get too Freudian or anything. Holy mackerel! This is a food show. So anyway, went off topic there again. So that's the intro. Just me, kind of welcoming you into the show, and helping you wind down with some nonsense that feels new and familiar at the same time. Because every intro is like this, where I say. This is really how the intro is structured. If I had a chess, what is that called? Like a flow board or whatever, a pitch deck, I'd say, okay, the intro is going to be 2 minutes today. I'm going to get there. Welcome to the new listeners. Structure the show. Tell them they don't need to listen because they could kind of passively listen or they could actively listen. Then tell them there's no pressure to fall asleep. I'm going to be here for about an hour. So if you can't sleep, I'm here to the very end. And then I'll close out the intro and it'll be 2 minutes long, but then I get distracted how could you not get distracted by that idea? I mean, by the time I'm serious. Like when I went to school, they didn't have umami. It probably had been invented. It just hadn't made it to even though I didn't grow up in the Midwest, the city I grew up in was very Midwestern-esque. And they may still scoff at the, you know, there may be like a neighborhood. Well, you got to go to the places that serve cuisine if you want umami. Anyway, so we just, we just had those other regions of the tongue where we say those are the flavors that humans can process. And I would still say, I don't buy it. I'd say, hey, teacher, I don't buy this. Your teacher would say, well, this is science. I'd say, what, is there a tongue scientist, actually? Dr. Tongue. I mean, there was Dr. Teeth in one of the Muppet bands. Yeah, but I don't necessarily, I guess there are tongue doctors. It knows mouth. Yeah, no, there's no tongue on that one. Isn't it one of the longer organs in the body after the skin? And the teacher would always say something about their ears. In my mind, they'd say, well, maybe you'll understand it better if you close your mouth, Andrew. And I'd say, well, and then they'd say, hey, excuse me, teacher, I just wondered, when is the report due on careers? Because I decided to change my career to be a doctor of tongue researcher. That's why I'm pulling my tongue out right now while I'm talking to you, because I want to really, I believe there's not four flavors on the tongue. And they say, Scoots, how did you come up with this sleep podcast? And I said, well, having you read my autobiography, The Only Boy in Town Who Believed in Umami, that was my first book that never was published and never written. It started out, I was alone in my room, alone with my tongue, just thinking about what we had learned at school today, wondering the nature of truth and the nature of flavors. And I suspected there was so much more to all of these things. I looked at the ceiling and I sighed. Then I rolled over. So even then I had the potential to put people to sleep. And then I looked at my tongue in the mirror for hours and hours, wondering, is that all you are? And actually, also coming in musical form one day. That was a pretty long title. So, The Boy Who Loved... No, I mean, it has to be, I was a kid in a town that didn't believe in umami. And I wanted to make a show. At first I said I was going to be a tongue doctor. And you could even make a show I called The Tongue Doctor. And that would, umami almost rhymes with the rest of that song, too. Anyway, I'm here to help you if you can't sleep. That's my main message, because I care. I've been there, sleepless in the deep, dark night, tossing and turning. And I just want to take your mind off stuff and keep you company as you drift off. Or, in case you can't, I'm here to keep you company the whole night long if you need it. And I mean, there is some subtext in this podcast because, I have been that boy lying in bed thinking I'm the only one who believes in umami, wondering if that's how you pronounce it and singing songs about it to myself quietly, loud enough so my brother would tell me to be quiet, but still, you know, just seeing, making up my own musicals about those things. And my brother, just like the listeners that are going to just go to sleepwithmepodcast.com/no thank you, say, how many times can you say umami in a podcast? Also, FYI, the word is, whatever the proper word is, I say, oh boy, yep, this happened to me like 180 episodes ago, too. So I don't know if you can catch the good-hearted nature of this podcast. The fact that it doesn't work for everybody kind of means that hopefully it works for you. You know what I'm saying? And if it doesn't work for you, I'm sorry. Like I said, go to sleepwithmepodcast.com/no thank you. There's some other stuff over there you could check out. But I really hope it does. Or just use it before bed to kind of loosen things up. Because my main goal isn't just to put you to sleep. It's so that bedtime, it doesn't feel like that, where you have to write a musical to help learn to coexist with a town that doesn't believe in a flavor flavor profiles or whatever. Oh, wait, some other part of my brain said there's a book, Sugar, Salt, Fat, that those are the old, oh boy, well, there goes 28 years of tongue research right out the window. I don't know. I hope you know that I'm glad you're here. And while this podcast doesn't work for everybody, give it a few tries and see if it can help you. I work very hard, I yearn and I strive, and I want to help you fall asleep. And here's a couple of ways we're able to keep this show free for everybody. All right, everybody, we're continuing our Worf kind of themed episodes here, I guess I'd say Worf strongly with a give me a strong side of Worf. Or, you know, I take my Klingons as strong, you know, I prefer my Worf. Anyway, couldn't think of any good jokes there. Also, I don't want to, you know, get any in the Klingons' bad side. So this episode is season 4, episode 7. I don't know if I said that, Reunion. And it starts off at the bridge. Everybody's working. I'll go through the dialogue, but I said, is there class 2, 3, and 4 probes, which will be answered? We see a Klingon ship. Oh, you know what? I just noticed something. This one of the first few shots in the show is shot from a really low angle. I never pay attention to that stuff except for close-ups. Right now I'm looking at the Enterprise, camera zooming in on it, or the Enterprise is moving. And yeah, now we have Riker, Picard, and Worf, and it was almost shot from the floor looking up at them, which I guess puts him in a place of authority. Klingon ship is, it appears, this is more gray than a normal, gray and red than the green. I really do find, this is a strange thing to say, but I find the green of Klingon ships very comforting. So this one, the gray one, I just said, huh, I miss that green. I don't know what it is. I just say, oh, that's a relaxing color for me. Let's see, open channel, they get a Klingon ship that was on it. We know, we'll go through the dialogue. Unexpected pleasure, Worf capitalize with an exclamation point, a nod, urgent matter, Lieutenant Godin receive our guest, Worf tries to get out of it. This is a really good Worf episode. Worf makes up an excuse, which, you know, we'll find out isn't he says, my dishonor will offend because it's another Klingon. And Picard is stern, goes to transport to room 2. Worf does a what? First, I don't know. Let me see. Like, Worf does a what? Then there's a zoom on Worf thoughtful. And as we see it, because they say 2 to transport, Worf does a what? Not transport number 2. And it's a kid, which we've met before, Alexander, which makes Worf even do, his Worf's mouth is wide open. And I think that's it. I think it opens after that. Let's see, where are they? Gamma, a Regulon system or something. Some anomalies are there. Readings inconclusive. Send out 2 class 1 probes. Klingon appears. What is that doing there? Everybody says, let's talk to them. And I think I got to figure out the I did a phonetic spelling of this person, you know, Kalar, is Ambassador Kalar, who's the unexpected pleasure. Good to see you again, Picard and Worf, she says. Maybe, I don't know if she's appeared on another episode. I have, this is my first Kalar experience. She's got an urgent matter, wants to come aboard. Yeah, Picard sends Worf, who says, you know, no, Worf's uncomfortable. Then transports in with the kid. And the episode opens, right? Excuses, Data? What is that? Oh, this is after the open. My handwriting here is Chad R. Touch on cloak. Bye bye, mommy. Worf, arms crossed, glove signed, walks away. Alexander plays. Elevator, awkward. Some cherish, can't make eye contact. Well, Worf can't make eye contact. Oh boy. Does this go deep? Worf won't ask and walks off the elevator. She is in Kalar, waits behind. Then we have a meeting with staff. Excuses, Data? Question mark. Okay, let's see if we could decode that, though. Bye-bye, mommy. We understand that. Chad, our touch and closed. I don't know what that says, honestly. I thought it was like child care. Oh, child care. Touch and closed. Okay, so Chad, that's child care. Yeah, but Alexander gets dropped off at the kind of child care. Oh, he hasn't had much contact with other children. I don't know what that, what my hand is, but he says, bye-bye, mommy. And Worf waits, arms crossed, and glares. And we learn right away, Kalar says, hey, Worf, how about a little kiss on my cheeky-poo? He goes, you haven't, don't you know I've been dishonored? And she goes, so what, are you going to not give me the time of day? And Worf goes, well, I respect our traditions, don't you? And she says, I thought you wanted to talk to me, maybe about something small and childlike. And then Worf, this is very 90s, 80s, he says, must I ask you the question? And I feel bad for Kalar because, you know, she's like in a position where she's, you know, crushing the patriarchy, and Worf's kind of, I don't know, but he says, must I ask you? Yes, you must. And he just walks away. And she goes, what should I tell Alexander that he about his father? Okay, I don't know what this excuses Data is, but waits behind. Then there's a meeting, a staff meeting. This has been coming. Kempek could keep the peace. He wants to meet with you, Picard, alone. It's about time, Picard. I think Kempek says that. Then he says, sit down. And they go, oh, the old Klingon dark reddish room. Kalar, or no, Kenpek's out of breath. Talks about Viridium 6 or something. He's a bit like King Robert Baratheon. Really, I said, well, is this Robert Baratheon based on this dude? He wants, I didn't look this up, but he wants Picard to arbitrate. First he says arbitrate, but then later Picard says this isn't simple mediation. I said, yeah, those are two different things, Jean-Luc. And he said, Scoots, stay in your wheelhouse, buddy. And I said, sure. And then he says, I have my reasons. You can't be serious, which reminds me of the routine in the movie Airplane. You can't be serious. Don't call me Shirley. On the contrary, I decline. Don't insult me, yo. That's what a Kempek says. By the way, I already sent out the order, so you're doing it anyway. You know, Picard says, WTF. Kempek says, sorry, brah. And he says, this isn't a simple mediation. You're actually asking me to choose the next leader. And something about fight for the right to succession. I want you, oh no, he says, is this my job, is to pick the new leader? He goes, no. He goes, I got Robert Baratheon, and I want you to figure out if it's Gowron or Duras doing it. He goes, because what was it, Lord Baelish or somebody else that did it back in the day? And I go, I don't remember. And then Picard says, Duras, that like rich kid, punk. And he goes, yep. He goes, interesting. And he says, you could say that very well. I accept. And they cheers. And it goes to commercial, I believe. Yeah. First, when the KLR meeting, she says, yeah, we got trouble, you know, with Klingon politics. And yet, then they have the KLR meeting or the Kempec meeting. Sorry, KLR. So then we go to commercial. Then we get a captain's log supplemental. Kempec's, you know, gone to the big, he's joined King Robert, wherever King Robert may be. We're waiting for Duras and Gowron, who both want to be leader of the High Council. Okay. 11:40, there's a great zoom on a Klingon ship. Really cool. We go back to the playroom. They're playing some sort of competitive block building game, which I said, I thought this was an advanced society. Why are they playing a competitive block building game? And Alexander's not happy that he didn't win. Worf shows up, like, it tells him he must earn victory. And then they're walking all, very cute scene, or I guess touching. This was less cute, but I guess it was super cute, but also they're walking. Alexander goes, where are the other Klingons? Worf goes, there aren't any. Just like a kid, he says, why not? Worf goes, Federation and Klingons haven't got along, you know, now they're just starting to. So no other Klingons have wanted to join Starfleet. And Alexander says, why? And Worf goes, don't ask so many questions. If you want to be like, you know, your stereotypical Klingon. He goes, I don't, by the way, Dad. He doesn't say Dad. He doesn't know it yet. Or does he? Then they go to Mom's room, Kalar's room. She goes, hey, why don't you go in the room and play with your toys? Mom and Worf got things to talk about. If you hear any snarling, it's a, like, romantic kind. And Worf's all bent out of shape about the kid. She says, he'll find his own ways. You know, why you gotta make, you can't make him be Klingon? He's also, she's half human. And then she goes back to this whole oath thing. She goes, what do you, she goes, you won't even, you know, acknowledge that he's your son right now. And he goes, why'd you keep it secret? Because she goes, you're so stubborn. I knew, you know, your style. And he goes, well, I'm like a disgraced Klingon, so that's not great. And she goes, well, what happened with that anyway? And he goes, well, they said my dad was in with the Romulans. And she goes, yeah, I heard that. And that you challenged it. And he goes, yeah, well, I pulled my challenge. And she goes, you don't give up, though. And he goes, so she goes, what really happened? And then they're saved by Riker Bell. Because Riker goes, Kalar, Worf, one, are you two hanging? And two, get to the bridge. Let's see. Worf still covers things up. Yeah. She can't believe it. Saved by the Riker Bell. Other ships pull up. Vorn and Borak or something are the ships. They say, let's get this over, Picard. Blah, 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 blah. Oh, that's when Duras calls, and Picard goes, we'll be there about an hour. He goes, what's with this delay? And Picard, you know, owns it. He goes, it's a time I'm in charge, and it's a time I've chosen. And by the way, I'm in charge. And then Duras goes, 1 hour, don't be late. And then Picard turns off the TV. He goes, when he goes, Worf's not welcome either on a Klingon ship. And then Picard goes to Kalar. He goes, yeah, we'll be, he goes, meet me in about an hour to leave. He goes, we'll be a little late. Then he pulls Worf aside. He says, geez, I'm aware of your discomfort. Worf goes, permission to speak freely, which he doesn't totally do. He just says, Duras is a punk. Picard goes, you're making it personal. He goes, no, it's not personal. He's a punk. And Picard goes, I know that, but I follow the rules. You can't, he goes, maybe his dad was, you know, he goes, I got to give him a chance. And then Picard goes, by the way, this isn't really about what you think it is. It's, Kempek got Baratheon, and so Worf's stunned. Then he's kind of stumped, and he goes about Duras. He goes, I know his heart is not Klingon. Then we're on Kempek's ship, and we get to see this interesting ceremony where everybody checks on the King Kempek's gone to the big, bird of WAR in the sky. They talk about the Sonchi ceremony, and Duras is like, let's get going here, man. Write a succession. And he goes, you know who's going for it? And Picard goes, yeah, we'll see. We'll follow all the rules. And the Gowron goes, what do you know of Klingon law, human? And Picard goes, well, I'm going to go back to the Enterprise. And Duras goes, no, now. Then there's one of the computers stops working properly, which causes a bit of a thing because it was someone downloaded something they weren't supposed to. We will proceed. No fishing it here. Poof. When the computer goes, not finishing it here. And then the computer goes poof. Then we go back to Worf. He shows up at a Kalar's room. He goes, I'm here on my duty as head of security checking on you. And she goes, oh, just your official concern? He goes, you know my feelings. And she goes, why don't you, fill me in? And she goes, geez, I wanted to tell you about, but I wasn't ready. And she goes, well, you said you'd never be complete without me. But she goes, I realized, it took me some time to realize I needed you too. So Worf has a little heartache. I didn't even realize that. She goes, you're a part of me, Worf. You're a part of me, Worf. And then, they kind of share a moment. And then she says, if you can't be his father, at least be his friend, which I really liked that line. Mostly they talk about, well, what about him? Is he going to, I got to keep you away from my dishonor. Then we're in the ready room. This is really good. Picard's like always, this is a really good scene with Kalar and Picard. I really like how she uses her body language. She's just so chill, but she really uses the space. I like how any actor playing a Klingon, whoever was directing them or coaching them, or just naturally, I don't know, if you pay attention, at least maybe I'm projecting. Be his friend, meeting with Picard, see she's so chill. Oh, this modern right. Because Picard's figuring out any angle he can do to buy time. I mean, really, Jean-Luc, he goes, well, what about modern right? He goes, what about an old school right? And she goes, oh, gosh darn, it's so long and dull and boring. And Picard goes, long, dull, and boring, huh? I like that. I said, well, Jean-Luc, you could listen to me. I mean, for buying time, he says, Scoots, not for sleeping. She goes, yeah, you're in charge, so you could use the old boring way if you want. And then she goes, permission to speak freely. What's going on with Worf's discommendation? You were with him. And Picard goes, can't talk about it, bye. Then they roll into the meeting room. Jaduk is Picard says, yeah, we're going to use the old school Jaduk thing. They say, well, that's obsolete. And Picard sits down and pulls his shirt while they have reaction shots. Because he goes, that's the way it is going to be. Long and boring. You got to make your case. And Kalar's there with him. They say it's going to take hours. And she goes, it could take days, depending on how cooperative you are. Then we have Alexander and Worf in his room. And Worf's showing him his flatware collection of all things. And he says, no. Part of your, when you use these flatware, consider it part of your hand or your arm. He goes, not just a tool you're using. Because Worf's big into that. It's just one of his many secrets. Then, let's see. It was just an interesting father-son moment, you know. I will speak with you alone. Why? What happened? So, oh, Kalar and, I think this is Kalar and Gowron. He goes, what's going to take so long? And she goes, Picard's taking so long. He goes, yeah, but you're his advisor. Quick, pick up the pace. You could get a good job in the High Council or something, not just be an ambassador, which is like, at least in the U.S., what everybody wants to do. Few rewards, a little glory. Don't you want some glory? Like a head on the head council? She goes, you talk like a Ferengi. Just wait and see how it goes. And he goes, Kalar talked like that. And she goes, Kalar or Kempak talked like that. And she goes, Kempak was old and weak. I am not, which I loved. Then we have Geordi, Data, and Riker working on it. And they make this Romulan connection. Impossible. Wait, where's this? Pick up the pace in the Empire. I am not. Laugh. Walk off. Molecular K. They say the computer meltdown was from a molecular kick decay thing. Only ones that use that are Romulans. That's a disk drive. Then there's an ad with Picard and Worf, Kalar, the whole crew. Why does it already say Picard's like WTF impossible? How could the Romulans mess up a computer? And Geordi says with Klingons and Romulans together, but they don't get along. And they say, well, is it Duras or Gowron that's trying to make a new alliance? And Data says it could be a fundamental shift in the power. And Picard goes, yeah, it was put us the Federation in a tough position. And then Riker says, well, who is it, Duras or Gowron? And Kalar says, well, Gowron, you know, offered me a seat on the council. Picard goes, well, that's not too suspect then. And she goes, they say, okay. And then Worf says, it's Duras. Come on. It's the most obvious thing. Person I like the least. And Kalar goes, what do you mean you like him the least? And Picard goes, well, we dealt with him. He's not trustworthy. And she says, can you be more specific? And they say, no. But we got a conspiracy. Holy moly. You know, since Winter Soldier, I haven't seen anything like this. And Picard goes, Worf, you're coming to the next meeting to even, you know, poker style, shake it up. And he goes, they're not going to be happy. It'll be disruptive. Picard goes, darn tootin'. Let's see, darn tootin', bad for Federation, must be Duras, more specific, Rascal, Renvial, yes it will. This is in Kalar's room. She goes, can you we'll load up some personal records? And they go, yeah, no, you can't read people's personal logs, restricted. She goes, okay, give me the rest of the reports then during the last visit to the Klingon Empire. My handwriting looks like Pascal or Rascal Resvial Research. She's like, I'll go through it one at a time. Another cool ship zoom. Close. Okay. Then the meeting is closing, the final phase. They say, okay, like they go one where they come in to the scene at the end of the boring part. They say, okay, the meeting's over. We're going to have a recess. Then we'll get into the final phase. Picard, how's it going? Picard goes, how's that investigation going? You're figuring out the computer thing. And both Duras and Gowron say, well, you know, it's like something weird. We don't know, but it's something weird. Melted the computer down. And then Worf takes it. He goes, yeah, well, we actually investigated it. He goes, it was a Romulan disk drive that caused a computer problem. And Duras goes, well, I better go back to my ship and check that out. And so Gowron stares down Duras and goes, as will I. I like this Gowron for now. I don't know. I don't remember the episodes after this I've seen, but I don't remember because I didn't know Gowron this well. So I guess I don't know him at all. Classic Worf, move through. What does that mean? Classic, oh, Worf goes, oh, we're more thorough. As will I, 7 beacon diplomatic access to Klingon net. I don't know what 7 beacon means, but that's Kalar. And she gets on the Klingon net. She finds more cover-up stuff because Duras sealed all these records and changed them. And she goes, all autobiographic files about Duras. Then we're back at, I guess we're on the Enterprise, because Duras and some lackey are in a room, and he goes, dude, I just got an alert. Kalar's looking into the Klingon central net about you. And he distracts the guard, the lackey, which was too easy. These Federation people are way too trusting. And we have a Duras and Kalar meeting. He goes, you were looking into me, huh? And she goes, yeah, I know everything at this point, more or less. And he goes, Worf's father's the one that's, and she goes, come on. She goes, what happened? Why did Worf take the blame for you? And he goes, drop it. And she goes, did you sell us out to the Romulans or not? And the scene ends on an ad break. Do not pursue any further. Clearly, she's going to pursue it because she's super cool. And then we get an ad break. Beverly's getting to the bottom of the disk drive thing. She goes, I did a dyno scan, and it was somebody from Duras that installed that disk drive. Then we have Worf and Alexander. He says, one day I'll sell you, show you the holodeck. And they go into Kalar's room, deck 8, room 142. And Duras has her going to the big, she's with King Robert, visiting King Robert Baratheon. And we have this great hand-holding moment with her and Worf and Alexander. Worf channels his inner lion and says, look and remember. Then Worf busts out of the room, goes back to his room, takes off his communicator and grabs his flatware. And then Riker, Picard, and Dr. Crusher are in the room, I think, or maybe they're at Med Bay. And they say, where in the heck is Worf? And they say he's not on the Enterprise. He's on the Vorn, Duras. Then we cut to Worf on the Vorn. And Worf rolls up on Duras. First, he gets introduced, though, by Duras's people. They say, Worf's here. And he goes, what is he doing here? And he goes, well, he has the right he goes, you know, the thing where you try to, like, everybody tries to cut perfectly, cut a meal for a child, like, cut up the kid's meat and stuff so they could eat it. He wants to have a competition with that. And the guy goes, Duras goes, you got no rights. And Worf goes, Kalar was my mate. And everybody, even the background people, were like, what? And it's go time. And clearly, it's a fast one. Worf and, like, Worf's very good, like, at cutting up. I think this was more of a, this was some sort of tougher meat, too. So it took some cutting. And you got to get those into really small bites. And Data and Riker are headed to the ship to shut this down because this is in violation of Starfleet regs. Worf's in total Worf mode. And I think he says, I'm the only one. Then that is how it shall be. Oh, he said, Duras says, why do you want to compete with me, man? I'm the only one that can clear your name. And he says, I'm the only one. So then actually Worf is so fast that Duras says, you know what, might as well not be a Klingon anymore. And he says, I'm going to go visit Baratheon. I'm going to teleport away forever. And without clearing Worf's name. And then, they were like 1 millisecond too late before Duras left. And they could have stopped at Riker and Data. Like literally a millisecond. They go, Worf. And then Duras went bye-bye. Duras ships out, Picard. Oh, then we have this great Picard thinking face. And I also kind of changed my view of how I'm going to watch these episodes. I mean, Picard is just such a, I don't know, well-balanced, I mean, not perfect, but close to it. That I said, man, how many people, this is really the first time I said, like, is this whole series like Picard is like almost like a benevolent being, like an all nearly, I mean, not all powerful, but all caring, like benevolent, loving being. He said, I could go to that, like, and do, like, say, okay. I mean, I guess it would be more the teachings of Picard. Yeah, because he's not transcendent. We'd have to cook that up. I don't know if that's what the next show's about, but I don't think so. Yeah, maybe it, like, tries to subvert that idea. Okay, so he's stern. He has a thinking face. Then he looks up sternly at Worf. He goes, you've been a great, your service has been great. Worf goes, that was Klingon law I was following. And Picard goes, Klingon law, but he goes, this is a starship. He goes, we got 13 planets of representatives here, and they all have their own belief systems and values, and I respect those, but we serve Starfleet. And if those two things are in conflict, you got to resign. That's just the rules, man. And he goes, do you want to resign? And Worf won't look up. Worf won't make eye contact with him. He goes, no, sir. And Picard looks down. At first, he's like a little sad, but thoughtful. He goes, okay, well, that's good because I didn't want to lose you. He goes, we're going to get a reprimand on your permanent record. And he goes, and another thing, he goes, now that Duras is gone, why don't you just tell the truth and air out the lies? And Worf says, well, every member of Klingon High Council shared in that. And he goes, well, the day will come when my brother and I convince them to speak the truth, but that today's not that day. And then we get a long, long Picard look. Then we see Alexander. Worf looks back at his cutlery collection. And he says, you're going to go live with my parents at Starbase 73. They're great. And even Scoots would say, oh boy, is his parents great. And Alexander's like, why can't I stay here? He goes, well, you deserve a home, a family, that I cannot provide. And he goes, geez, I miss her too. And Alexander goes, are you my father? And he says, yes, I am your father. And at first they hold hands, and then they do this big time hug. It is so lovely. And, you know, what a journey of an episode. And it comes to a close. So this is a really classic episode, I think. All right, let's look up some stuff that came up in this episode. One was like, how many types of probes are there? I mean, space probes, I mean. And it went over to memoryalpha.fandom.com. So probe is an automated spacecraft, used for tasks starships can't handle, collecting information, maybe going places that need to be smaller, places that might be, weather might not be great, deep space exploration, or remote recording of telemetry or other things. Let's see, before, when it was the United Earth Probe Agency, before Starfleet, they would send it out. Some were modified photon torpedo casings. It does look like what we saw. They might not want to go on, they probably shouldn't land on a planet. Yeah, let's see what else. But there was, there's class one probes, which was featured in five episodes of TNG. class 2 probes, which were in TNG and Deep Space Nine. A class 3 probe, which was in a TNG episode, a class 4 probe, and a class 5 probe. So it looks like there's like a class 6, 7, 8, and 9, and a class A probe. So I don't know which one's the most advanced. Maybe they tell us that. Yeah, other cultures have probes as well. Yeah, I mean, I think a class 1, I don't know if that's the best or not. The pictures are really inconclusive. Yeah, but I just, my first question was, you know, had they mentioned other probes? I assume so, but, you know, I've been wrong many times before. Okay, here's your word if you're a student or you just love words. It sounds like a simple word, but it's not. Stern, S-T-E-R-N. And it can mean harsh, what is that, an adjective, severe in manner or character, showing or expressing displeasure or disapproval, firm or unyielding, uncompromising, or difficult to endure, stern. Then there's a stern as a noun, nautical, the rear part of a ship or boat, or the rear part of a section. I think that's it. I was just wondering if it was related to one another, but I don't know. It didn't say that there. Okay, Viridian. Yeah, I think it's Viridian. Yeah, I think this is where the episode started, maybe. I already forgot. It's a Viridian star system, Beta Quadrant. It's on a, like, even Spock saw it on a star chart. Is that it? Yeah, that's all I got over it. Wait, here maybe is more. Oh, no, that's not it. So that's just a little bit about that. I may have talked about this movie on the podcast before. It's a 1980 movie by David Zucker and Jim Abrams. It came out in 1980, so it was before my time, but I've seen it many times on TV, and had a lot of celebrities, Airplane, with an exclamation point, and it's a satire. I don't know if it was their first movie. It's a parody of movies that were popular in the late 70s, so it's kind of based on that. Who wrote those books, too? Like Hotel and Airport, I forgot. I almost added. It has surreal humor, slapstick comedy, lots of puns and gags and obscure mentions. It made $83 million. This is in 1980 on a budget of $3.5 million, and it was a multiple award winner. It's definitely worth checking out. It's definitely aged, so it, not all that, you know, it's a thing, but, so it's Jerry Zucker, Jim Abrams, and David Zucker. They wrote Airplane. They were still performing with the Kentucky Fried Theater, which they founded in 1971. And Craig from Script Notes worked with the Zuckers for a while. That's how I know how to pronounce it, because I would have said Zucker, but he said it's Zucker. It was like Zucker, like Sucker. No. So maybe I am saying it wrong. I think it's Zucker, though. But it's a Z-U-C-K-E-R. Because it's not like Sucker. Because you'd say Zucker, but I think it's... But anyway... they were, you know, they had a comedy troupe, they were doing a lot of stuff, they did commercials, let's see, to obtain material for the comedy routines, sometimes they watched late night television and reviewed the tapes and watched the late night commercials, and they unintentionally recorded the 1957 film Zero Hour, and found it was a perfectly structured classical film. And it became the series. It's like they said it was a serious version of our film. And so they tried to stay close to the dialogue and plot of that movie. Because this must have been their first film. They even thought they would have to negotiate the rights. Oh, no, but then they tried to stay within the allowance of parody. Oh, but they did get the rights for $2,500. The script also contains spoofs of television commercials, but they removed them. But they were unable to sell it. They knew John Landis, who encouraged them to write a film based on their sketches, which became the Kentucky Fried Movie. And that was the first time they said they'd been on a TV set. We learned that if you really want a movie to come out the way you wanted it to, you had to direct it, though. And then they cast, like, Lloyd Bridges, Robert Stack, Leslie Nielsen. It was released. That's a little bit about it. I'll link to it for a little bit more if you want to read about it. That's from Wikipedia. So is this, you got to fight for your right to party. Sometimes shortened to Fight for Your Right, is a Beastie Boys. It was the fourth single on the album from 1986, Licensed to Ill. Wikipedia says it's one of their best-known songs. I think it once was one of their best-known songs. It was written by Adam Yauch and Tom Cushman, who also appears in the video. And it was supposed to be also a parody of songs like Smoking in the Boys Room and I Want to Rock, but most people had went over their heads that it was actually a goof on the party lifestyle. The video is very comedic. And let's see. Let's see what else. There is a lot of cameos in the video. Rick Rubin was even in the video wearing AC/DC and Slayer shirts. Let's see. In 2011, Adam wrote a surreal comedic short film based on it to make do the 25th anniversary. And there's been a lot of remakes. It's won a lot of rewards. That's all that's on there about it on Wikipedia. It also reminds me of the song Party for Your Right to Fight from Public Enemy album It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back, which probably is like one of the top three or four like albums, which used to be a thing, like biggest impact on my life, and is still like one of the greats. So if you haven't listened to it, Party for Your Right to Fight is not the best song on there, but it's on there. It's a good one. And I just wanted to read it. It's the second studio album by hip-hop group Public Enemy. It came out in 1988. They set out to make the hip-hop equivalent of Marvin Gaye's What's Going On with strong social commentary. It was recorded in 87 in New York. They intended it to make music with a faster tempo than the first album for performances. It charted for 47 weeks in the Billboard 200. It is certified platinum. It had over 1 million copies sold. Critically, it was successful. And like I said, a lot of people consider it one of the greats of all time. Let's see. So their 87 album, Yo Bum Rush the Show, was acclaimed but it didn't hit the charts, which was what you had to do back then. It only sold 300,000 copies. But they toured and they were recording a lot. By the time the album even came out, they were already recording Nation of Millions. They set out to do this Marvin Gaye social commentary album. And there's even a live track on there, I think, from shows. Oh, maybe two live tracks from London and Philly. Let's see. Recording It, Bring the Noise, Don't Believe the Hype, Rebel Without a Pause. Most may have been the first tracks completed. Yeah, but they like this is really deep, even for Wikipedia. So you could really read a lot more about the production, everybody who had a hand in this brilliant album, a lot of the messaging on it, its release, its legacy, which has a huge, huge legacy. it just, like, socially, it's amazing. And just sound-wise, it's amazing. I don't want to start singing, but yeah, it's one of my it really changed my life, that and a couple of other things around that time, or had a great influence on me. Okay, one last thing was, like, Now You Know, and I said, isn't Now You Know, like, NBC's PSA thing? And then I said, oh, no, it's G.I. Joe, but then G.I. Joe is Knowing is Half the Battle. So then I Googled the NBC one, but it's The More You Know, which is the public service announcements broadcast on NBC's channels with educational messages. They feature personalities from NBC shows and even presidents and news people. Started in 1989. Before that, they had one to grow on, was their PSAs from 83 to 89. And on Telemundo, it's El Poder de Saber, the power of knowledge. It was Dr. Rosalyn Weinman who developed the campaign and wrote most of the on-air PSAs. This is from Wikipedia. And ran the campaign for 10 years. Steve Bernstein did the first Comet Tail star logo. They won a Peabody in 1993. They had a lot of guests over the years. Amy Poehler, Joan Rivers, Jack McBrayer, Steve Harvey, Angelica Houston, Questlove, Jimmy Fallon. A lot of our past presidents, first ladies. It's also been widely parodied on TV shows. A lot of TV shows in here. And let's see, what else? CBS is CBS Cares, it says in here. So there's just a little bit about it. I don't know, it made me think of it. So that's it. That's a little bit about what came up in this episode. And I'll see you soon. Here's some thanks and good nights.